From the Osage Casino Studios, it is a community connection this morning brought to you by Tallgrass Motors and by Eastern Oklahoma Orthopedic Center. We will talk a state representative race with Daryl Fincher coming up in just a moment.
Is it time to start thinking about a new car? But the thought of dealing with the large dealerships is just too intimidating, too confusing? There is an easier way. Tallgrass Motors. Tallgrass Motors doesn't play all the confusing games the large dealerships play. Tallgrass Motors has continually been voted Bartlesville's best used car dealer year after year. Go by Tallgrass Motors today and enjoy looking at over 60 used cars, trucks, and SUVs, all priced to save you money. Tallgrass Motors, Highway 75 North in Bartlesville.
AM 1400, 93.3 FM, K1, spending a little bit of time this morning with candidate for the District 11 State Representative seat, Daryl Fincher. Thank you for coming in this morning, sir.
Thank you.
And it is you counting the days better than I am, but we are roughly a month away from a primary election. It's an open seat, and we'll see how things go from there. Thank you. We talked a week or so ago and kind of an introduction of the candidate to the listeners. You've been knocking on doors, talking with people, and what do you hear that's on the mind of the voters this morning?
Well, I hear a couple of things. One has to do with the education, because that was such a big deal. The other one has an education funding, and the other one, of course, has to do with the waste, fraud, and abuse that people believe is in state government, and there definitely is some waste, fraud, and abuse that's in there.
And let's just take those in reverse order. Waste, fraud, and abuse, I guess, first of all, that's a topic I can think of, an Air Force fraud, waste, and abuse hotline that I remember being told about, Tinker Air Force Base, 1973. Mm-hmm. So we've been after fraud, waste, and abuse for a while, but there still is either not best use of dollars or dollars are being just plain wasted, right?
Well, yeah, there is some of that. And one of the things that I was involved in comes down to when it comes down to making a decision about what item you're going to purchase. Sometimes in all their, all their investigation, they end up with, purchasing something that's far more expensive than an equivalent item. That would be considered waste. While there is some in there, we really don't have a handle on how much. However, there is you may have heard that there's 400 or 500 million of waste, fraud, and abuse in the government, and if we just audit, we'll find it all. And that's really kind of a misdirection of what's going on in there. The issue that we have first, audits can identify inefficiencies. They can find things where, possibly we're not spending the money as well as we could, or even because we are an $8 billion state government, you might even find a little bit of fraud in there. But one of the issues is that you can't audit yourself into prosperity. And so when people are talking about making large cuts to government, we'll find, maybe tens of millions of dollars, but in an $8 billion government, that's not a huge amount. I know it sounds like big dollars, but as a percentage, it's not that large. And what we actually find out is that if we cut budgets to agencies, you then end up, agencies are still required to do the same jobs that they've done before. And they have to follow the law. And when you cut the money to the agency, you then give bureaucrats who are working in agencies, they have to make the decision about who they're going to, or which statute they're going to follow. Occasionally it's which service is going to happen. And that's not the bureaucrat's responsibility. That's not a government employee's responsibility. That's really the responsibility of the legislature. So if the legislature wants to reduce funding, they also have to go into the statutes for the agencies and say, okay, this is the feature, this is the function you're no longer going to do, and the people who would do that would go home. But nobody stepped up to say, this is definitely what they want to cut out.
So it's like, and I'm trying to use a different example, it's like writing the specifications for a hammer used on an Air Force aircraft that it has to withstand so much impact or so many pounds of pressure. When you write the standards, you end up with those $50 million hammers, so to speak.
Yes, that's exactly what happens. And you can end up with things that's way more expensive, and just a little bit of a tweak can drive costs up. But in our case, with the statutes, we have so many of them that we, in order to make large cost reduction, you really have to change what the agencies do. This gets back to, I mentioned last time that I worked in design and I headed a project. And one of the first things you learn in design when you're working on designing new products is that your costs are baked in the conception phase. That is, once you conceive what the product is and start putting the rough outlines together, you've kind of baked in your costs. All the cost reduction in the world is not going to make that much cheaper unless you change what you're doing. And so as they're working on that, that's the same way with state agencies. Your costs are baked in by your statutes. If you need to reduce the cost, you need to change what the statutes do.
And then adequately, or many would say fully, fund the job as what the statute then would call for.
Well, that's right. Fully fund the job. Now, there's one other thing that goes on is when the budgets get cut, the agencies are trying to do their core mission, and what they lose are the functions that are necessary to operate, which is the oversight that you have in the agency to make sure things work appropriately. Everybody who runs a business will tell you that any money that they put into making their business run efficiently pays out in the long term and makes them more efficient, it makes them more profitable, it makes them better a better company and better at customer service. Well, because those aren't necessarily written into the statutes, those are taken away, and then you have all sorts of things going on where people aren't necessarily acquiring the data properly, they're not necessarily keeping track of everything that they're doing as well. You know, I've even seen that where you're using antiquated equipment to try to, and software to try to keep track of what you're doing.
Is that where the performance audit comes in, where you're looking not only on how the money is allocated, but how it is being effectively used?
Well, that's a performance audit, but part of it is even the process you get back to determining where the money goes. If you talk to any, you know, many companies have built in what are called quality management systems. That's just a fancy term that says, there are some standards out there on what a well-run company looks like. You know, the sorts of checks and balances that you have. It's kind of like accounting standards. Our agencies aren't necessarily required to follow anything like that, and so it's up to each individual agency or director to develop their own. And what we can do as legislatures actually help them by specifying some of the features that they will have to have. Now, there's been some starts on that, but we need to go into it a little bit further, which will make that more efficient. But we have to realize that that costs money up front, but it saves money and reduces costs in the long term.
Is that sometimes a point that you have to make when you're talking with voters to lay the groundwork for what you'd like to do then?
Yes, it is. Because it's like you put in upfront investments that actually end up giving you a whole lot better performance down the road. And so as I talk to voters, one of the things we are talking about is the some of the investments up front. Now, we can go ahead and find some areas that we would not necessarily need to fund right away, and those are the things that I'm looking into now.
Okay. Well, we are again talking with Daryl Fincher. He is a candidate for a state representative on a Community Connection this morning, and as we look at some of your issues that you are talking with voters about, again, you mentioned, of course, your primary background, that of something resembling the school system, whether it's as an educator or as someone involved more at the board level and that sort of thing. School funding, teacher pay, two separate but related issues. That's something that's obviously been in the news, not only Oklahoma, but five or six states across the country. A fairly common theme in many cases, not enough dollars going into the classroom.
Well, that's it. And part of it is, you know, how much, when we're looking at what does it take to educate a child? I've heard a lot about the administration overhead. And one of the difficulties, I think, that schools have changed since we were kids is it was pretty much, well, you had four walls, you had electricity, you had some water down the hall, and, hey, you had a school. We're now to the point where we have really decided that we're trying to get more people into school because a lot of people dropped out. My grandfathers, neither of them went to high school. They had to go to work, and they were very successful at doing that. But that's no longer an option, so we're getting more kids into school. There were kids who did not go to school back then.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting more kids into school. Furthermore, there's more services that we provide them. We've realized that supporting students is critical because there's been an issue with suicides in schools for the students, and so we work with the counselors and everything else. That's a little bit of overhead that gets added that goes into that. But at the same time, teacher pay isn't the sole issue. We also get down to the number of kids that we have in a classroom. I remember before I got into teaching, I walked into my wife's class once, and she was teaching eighth graders, and they all stood up, and she was in a small room. She had 30 of them in there, and she had six of them, six periods during the day. So she was seeing 180 students during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, when it came time and she'd give them an assignment where they had to write something, I didn't see her for 2 weeks. You know, she spent all evening and all weekends just reading this stuff. And so part of this is are you able to provide more attention to more students? And part of that is the class size.
Mm-hmm.
But then as we move down the road, and I've been talking with people about this as well, we need to prepare students for their future and not their past. And a lot of that looks like many people are thinking of schools in terms of what they went to, where we had classes. And just a little bit of school history for people who are interested. We had the Committee of 10 way back in the late 1890s that defined what school looks like.
Right.
And they came up with this really crazy idea that everybody adopted. You know, if you put all your kids of the same age in the same grade and teach them the same thing, you could be a graded school. And that's what we have right now. Well, now it's time to go back and look at what sort of skills are needed for the future. It's the communication. Kids have to be able to collaborate. You talk to any business, they want kids who can work with others effectively to turn things out. You want students who can not only work to the person next to them, but can work with somebody who's in another building or another other state or even across the someplace else in the world and do that effectively and know that, how to do that appropriately. And you want students to be able to solve problems and come up with their own questions on solving problems. And so this is how we're going to be looking at the schools going forward. There are no easy solutions, and there's a whole lot of details that go into that.
And certainly preparing the student for, I'll say, life after school, whether that's college, going on to some form of education or career, military, whatever. And so how we prepare them certainly is different now than when either you or I were, say, a high school senior.
That's right. And I think one of the things we've seen is we've seen a push for sending everybody to college. And, you know, college is just one path for a way for somebody to be successful in life and contribute to society. And we can't forget they have to be able to contribute to society as well. And there are many other paths for them to get post-secondary education, and college is just one of those paths. The military, as you mentioned, is a great option for people. There are other trade schools and other things they can do, and they can even think about being an entrepreneur. Although, to be fair, most entrepreneurs are in their 40s because it's much better to go out and get some experience to see how things don't work.
Other than that lemonade stand that you probably now have to get a permit from the health department to operate in front of your house and you bring the lemonade out of your kitchen, yeah, you're right. Entrepreneurship is something that happens generally later.
Yeah.
We're talking with Daryl Fincher this morning on A Community Connection. We will continue in just a moment.
If you're suffering from a bad back, bad knees, need a hip replacement, call the Eastern Oklahoma Orthopedic Center, 918-494-9300. With a large number of only the best qualified specialists on staff, EOC is able to provide better care than anyone else in Eastern Oklahoma. I should know. I had my back surgery in 2012 with a degenerative disc between L4 and L5. Eastern Oklahoma Orthopedic Center took me through a step-by-step process. Which now, after surgery, I am leading a normal life. Get back to your normal life. Whether you're in need of back surgery, hip replacement, knee surgery, or knee replacement, trust your happiness to Eastern Oklahoma Orthopedic Center. Ask your doctor about EOC or call for a consultation. 918-494-9300. Eastern Oklahoma Orthopedic Center. We're located in the Natalie Building at 6475 South Yale in Tulsa.
Continuing our time this morning with candidate for State Representative Daryl Fincher, and we're talking, well, at least so far, the two topics that you have said have been on the mind of voters.
Yes.
And that kind of goes along with one of the other related topics, and that has to do with taxation, getting the money to pay for those programs, or, again, the priorities that are being set by the state legislature. Where do we get the money to pay for schools, for teachers, and also for, fixing roads and bridges and all the other requirements that are the necessary functions of state government?
You know, that's where the real challenge comes in. I know that we do have people, and I understand their point of view, that we shouldn't have taxes. What we really need, though, is an effective, efficient government paid for by all. And one of the things that we're looking at, or that I'm looking at, is first, we do have tax credits out there that don't really come in and pay a lot of or don't have much return on them. If we're giving tax credits, we should have a specific goal for the tax credit. It should either be we're either trying to encourage some sort of activity, or we're trying to increase the encourage people or to get more money in it. And that was part of the reason for doing the tax cuts in the past, is there was this belief that if you cut taxes, it generates much more revenue and investment. I think one of the things that we've seen is with recent tax cuts, while there's been some bonuses that have been put out, a lot of it's also gone into stock buybacks. Apple just announced a massive stock buyback because they've got all this cash that they need to use. So that's one way to look at it. And the other, of course, is our gas tax and has been very low. We have one of the lowest in the nations. And that is one of the closest things to a use tax that you get, where when you're actually people who pay it are ones actually using the roads. So that's something you really want to have dedicated more towards your transportation infrastructure. But we're also running into the issue where, if I think I mentioned the concept last time, that you get some all-electric cars that don't pay the gas taxes. Down the road, we're going to have to start thinking about how those people also contribute to building the roads.
And certainly when we were paying a buck or so for gasoline, cars were less efficient. The gas mileage maybe was 12 miles per gallon, 15, 19 miles per gallon, as opposed to the 25, 26, 30, 45.
Oh, so, yeah. I'm just amazed at how much mileage these big cars get now.
And so we're buying fewer gallons of gas, therefore the number of dollars generated is not the same as it was then.
In real terms, the amount of money you're taking because of inflation has continued to decrease because we're not selling quite as much. It's just a really interesting conundrum.
Yeah, it is. Oklahoma is the only state, I believe, that requires cities to operate almost exclusively on a sales tax.
Mm-hmm.
There are other taxing mechanisms in other places that cities can use, and they vary even the other 49 states. But it would be, I believe, legislative action that would change that. Has that come up at all in your conversation?
No, we really haven't talked much about that. I did, have an interesting conversation about the difference in taxation between, for example, Wyoming and Texas don't have income tax.
Right.
But then when you sit down and you look at where are they getting all their money, well, it turns out that they may not have income tax, but boy, try paying your property taxes in those states. And also looking at the severance taxes on the gas and the total taxation on the industry is actually higher in Texas than it is here. And I don't think people understand that. They just think, oh, gee, we have a really high sales tax. That's because that's how we fund our city. But in the other areas, Texas also has a high sales tax, but they don't have the income tax, but they have a whole bunch of other taxes that people are paying on top of it. It's really what is the total revenue and how do you generate that is the topic for the legislature to discuss.
So in effect, the pie probably is more or less the same. It's a matter of how we're slicing it up then.
Yes, unless we can improve the economy, and that's one of my tasks is how do we actually start attracting the businesses that we need? And we've got some things going on in the state right now, but first, we talked about education. We need students who are able to actually work in those businesses. Second thing, think about the jobs that are out there today. You never heard of a Facebook designer or engineer before, 10 years ago. Now, that's a very hot topic for being able to work on that. We have to think that the jobs that are going to be out there in 20 years are not things that have been invented yet. And we don't want to end up being a steamroller like Congress was with Zuckerberg. You need people up there who do understand the technology that is out there and understand how it works.
And that is probably yet for these current high school students to invent.
Yes, as a matter of fact, a lot of the good ideas come from that because there are some with a really good idea you can develop some new businesses.
Zuckerberg was what, a college sophomore or junior when he put the basics together for Facebook, I think. So, yeah.
Yes, that's correct. And, look at Gates.
Yeah, exactly. So, again, the state priorities, the legislature is, in many respects, setting the priorities for the executive branch through what it does with how it allocates dollars. Mm-hmm. And then you and I were talking before we went on the air as far as the legislature, the equivalent, I guess, of the school board or the city council setting policy and then hiring a superintendent, i.e. the governor, the agency heads, to then actually do the work.
Well, that's right. You look at it as it's been referred to as flying at the 30,000-foot level. They're the ones who should have the vision, the big picture, the long-term goals, where we're going. I know it's really exciting, and it gets people all riled up to talk about, I'll be doing this down at, this state agency, etc. That's not the legislature's role. The legislature's role is to pass the statutes that actually define what the agencies do or to cut down what it does. If they don't feel that the agency is doing what they should, not if they're not meeting the requirements of the statute, then what you do is you replace the agency director. I mean, that's just plain and simple. You replace the agency director, you do a turnover in there. But that's not the, you know, once they replace the director, they put somebody in and they approve them who will actually be able to go in and fix the agency to follow the law. Now, if they are following the law and they need them more efficiently, then the legislature is not the one that goes down there and tells them how to become more efficient inside the agency. What they do is they work at the 30,000-foot level to provide the guidelines. Those are what statutes are that the agencies have to follow on how to become an efficient, effective agency. And we need to do more work at the state level on what does an efficient, effective agency look like.
Again, we're talking with Daryl Fincher. He's a candidate for a state representative. We've got a little bit more over than a minute, but I want to make sure that you get the opportunity to talk about how people can get involved in your campaign. Certainly, we're talking about roughly, it's a little bit more, but roughly a month away, and the conversation probably needs to increase from where it is today.
That is correct. And yes, if people would like to get involved in my campaign, they can just go to fincherforhouse.org. That's an F-O-R. Venture4House.org. There's contact information there. My phone number's there. Rings right in my pocket. Won't ring right now because I have my phone on mute.
Thank you very much.
Try to do that so you don't even hear the buzz when it goes off. And there's all the contact information there. We also do have the education forum on May 22nd that I will be at with the other candidates, and so you'll get to hear us up close and personal. And you should also have some opportunity to ask questions at that. League of Women Voters is doing one in early June.
Yes.
And there will be one for the Green Country Republican Women's Club later in June.
And so several opportunities to side-by-side, A, B, compare the two candidates with their answers to the same question at the same time.
That's correct.
Again, this is we've been talking with Daryl Fincher, and we'll remind people you already have to be registered as a voter in Washington County to be casting a ballot in this primary. But again, always a good thing to be registered in November.
Yes, and change your address, folks. I've knocked on a few doors where different people are there, and they said, oh, we just moved there. Change your address. You're voting in the right district.
Thank you very much. Daryl Fincher on K1.
ONN News, I'm Sean Carey. LaFleur County deputies weren't surprised to find drugs in a car after an Arkansas couple led them on a high-speed